Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Do you like what you're hearing right now? Then be sure to check out VOC Nation. Whether it's on VOCNation.com or your favorite podcast provider, VOC Nation offers the greatest in live and on-demand content, great interviews, and incredible insight from those who have lived the business. 7 days a week, VOCNation.com. And don't forget to check us out on Twitter at VOC Nation.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Rock and Roll Union Streamcast. I'm CT, as always, here with Bill. Really excited for this show this evening. We're going to be talking with Jaron Gelino, bassist extraordinaire from Lynch Mob, from Heaven's Edge, from a lot of the old Philly bands you guys all remember so well, Mach 22 being one of them. But really, really excited to speak with him. Really excited to get the show going. But while we wait on Jaron, I figured, Bill, we got a little bit of time. We could talk about the Have You Heard segment. We'll kick it off this week with that. And I'll tell you what, I checked out Alex Harvey. We talked a little bit before we came on the air about it. And it really reminded me a lot of Pretty's For You, the very first album from Alice Cooper. Reminded me a lot of that era's type. But there was some other stuff in there that, like, I've watched some videos of performances and stuff that they did with Faith Healer. It was interesting to me that there was some progression in there. There was the guitar player in the clown makeup and some of the mannerisms, some of the facial expressions, some of the stuff that to me in 1973 seemed a little bit predated at that point. I mean, you could see where that led to.
Yeah. Alex Harvey was an interesting character. He was a bit older than the other guys in the band. When the band first started, I think most of the band members were 22, 23 years old. By comparison, Alex Harvey was 35. Alex Wow. Harvey was born in 1935. And he had spent a fairly long career first playing in the clubs in Scotland and then subsequently appearing in London's West End in the London version of Hair. So he was a stage performer first and foremost before he was really a recording artist. Although he did make a couple of records of the 60s also, but those didn't really take off. But in any event, he ended up drafting an existing progressive rock band called Tear Gas that the other four members of the band that became the sensational Alex Harvey band had been part of with a different singer who ultimately became their record producer.
Wow.
And they deliberately went out of their way to be theatrical in their presentation, both with their lyrics and in the stage costumes they wore. I mean, Alex Harvey had something of a pirate look. You mentioned Zal Clemenson, the guitar player, with his clown mime getup and makeup. They never really cracked the United States, and it's a shame because they provided a lot of inspiration for quite a few bands in particular. And you might hear this if you listen to the vocal style that Alex Harvey employed in a lot of these songs. Alex Harvey ended up providing a lot of inspiration to another famous Scottish singer, a fellow by the name of Bon Scott.
Yes. Oh, I got my little guy following me down here.
Hi, Yummy. Can I have this
Sorry, guys, but I am. Take them to mommy. Go ahead. Sorry about that. Life with a 4-year-old.
Oh yeah.
We're going to go off to. We're going to finish off this discussion. Not to pause it right here, but I want to bring in Jaron. And maybe we could discuss the song that I had thrown at you, Bill, because I got a feeling that Jaron might know that one. Guys, please welcome Jaron Gelino to the stage.
What's up, guys?
Hey, Jaron.
Sorry about the life with a 4-year-old. But so, Jaron, we started a new segment on the show called Have You Heard? And I'm not. It's just kind of songs that friends are bouncing back and forth, maybe songs that the other person hasn't heard before, or kind of refreshing on old songs. And Bill had given me the song from the Alex Harvey Band, Faith Healer. Not sure if you're familiar with that one at all.
I don't think I am.
And then the song that I threw at Bill, I got a feeling you know the one I threw at Bill, was We Care a Lot by Faith No More.
Oh, yeah, of course.
So, Bill was a little unfamiliar with that one, and I was like, man, this is like what started Faith No More. I'm a big Mike Patton fan. It is pre-Mike Patton. But Bill, wanted to get your ideas on the song and bounce it back to Jaron after.
I enjoyed the song, and I have to tell you, I'm surprised. I had never heard it before, at least not knowingly. But listening to it and thinking about when it was cut in the late 80s, there is a lot of elements of music that were happening with other bands, both just before and just after that one was recorded. I can hear a lot in the bass style that would have been similar to what people like Flea or Eric Avery were playing back then in particular. And there were some elements of the song that actually made me think around you know, what Alice in Chains were doing on Facelift on their first album.
What do you think, Jer?
Sure, yeah. Kind of piggybacking on the bass part, the tone, man, I mean, it was just kind of crushing. Faith No More had a really heavy sound, I think, early on, you know, before a lot of people really went that route. And, you know, I feel like back then, a lot of the bands that you would hear a bass tone like that from would be like some killer thrash bands. You know, they kind of had a more of an aggressive tone. So to hear a band a little bit more commercial go that route was pretty cool. And I played the hell out of that record so many times. So, yeah, man, it's a great one. And again, kind of like you said, Bill, I mean, it was early on there. So definitely interesting to see how that came into the timeline.
And I think my favorite part of the song is it's just so indicative of the time period, the things that they talking about the Transformers, talking about just the different lyrics in the song kind of make me chuckle when I listen to it. But Jaron, so thank you so much for being here tonight. Wanted to talk to you a little bit. I mean, you are now gearing into the End of the Road kind of tour with George Lynch, and wanted to ask you about that, your thoughts on that, and if you'd had any thoughts to what comes next for you.
You know, it's a little bittersweet because I'm going on my second year with Lynch Mob. You know, I've been a fan for you know, a really long time, and you know, to finally get a shot to not only play in a band in the style of music that I always, you know, enjoyed playing or wanted to play more of, but to play with the one that I really liked the most, you know, it's awesome. But, you know, to know that it's coming to an end here in the next, you know, year or so, you know, it as sad as it is, it's exciting because it's something that the guys are really passionate about. You know, they know that the clock is ticking, but with that comes, we want to go out strong. We want to hit it hard every night. We want to play songs that maybe we've never played before, or stuff that the band's never touched on. And, you know, a guy with George Lynch who's been playing for 40 something years, that's a deep catalog, everything from early Dokken to Exciter and the Boys and all that stuff. So we are touching on a lot of that stuff, and it's exciting for that. But at the same time, you know, we say we're hanging it up in March, and that is in fact the plan of March of 25. But you know, that's not to say that some killer offers may not come in and it might get a little extended, but right now there isn't anything there. So, you know, March of 25 seems to be coming pretty quick, but we are going to really hammer the road this year and really make sure that we get to most, if not all, the places that people want us to come to. And, you know, it's just, again, once it's all over, you know, it's not only sad for me because I have a killer gig, but it's sad for me and the rest of the fans that don't, you know when they're going to see George next. You know, will he still go out and play? Maybe. Who will he play with? We don't know. But, you know, you can count on him being busy in the studio and stuff outside of the road. So, you know, I just feel weird about it. And the question I get every day on tour and even off tour is, you know, what are you going to do after? You know, what do you got lined up? And this far out, I'm not thinking about it. I'm enjoying every last second. I'm enjoying every show and every song and every show and making sure that I do the band justice by performing well and or the best of my abilities, whether that's well or not, that's up for debate. But, you know.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
There's been talk, you know, I've gotten a couple offers and I'm just not there. I want to focus on this as much as I possibly can all the way to the very end. And if something comes up closer to the finish line, you know, maybe I'll explore that. But as of now, everything else is just kind of noise. And I mean that with the most respect to everybody else, you know, even with the other bands that I do play with, you know, with Heaven's Edge and the Life Project and some of these things, you know, Heaven's Edge does a little bit here and, you know, some of the other guys in the other bands want to do stuff, but my heart is with George all the way to the end. And when he says it's time to go, it's time to go. So just going to see it through and try and enjoy it as much as I can.
Now, how did you connect with George, if I can ask?
What was that?
How did you connect with him?
Through mutual friends and people in the industry. And I've been going to lynch mob shows and all sorts of events, you know, along the lines of stuff that George has done for a long time. So a familiar face soon becomes one that you might know, and then it kind of snowballs into something. And it took me a lot of years of playing with many different bands to get myself up to a standard, I think, to where I was ready for that gig. And, you know, I had really wanted something like that for a long time, and to be able to, again, get the one that, you know, would be the holy grail for me was very special. But, you know, I also think the timing was right, and I paid my dues, learned a lot of things playing with other bands, whether it's the actual playing and performing or the stuff off the road, like tour managing and dealing with all the nonsense that comes along with being on tour. And I think my internship in rock ran its course, and it was time for an upgrade, and it just came at the right time.
You know, I'm glad you brought up that tour management kind of spot. Just thinking about, I mean, being on tour with George and doing all the things that you've done within the past, God, 7-8 years. Has there been any thought to you as maybe doing something aside from playing bass later on, maybe producing or tour management or something along those? I mean, you've met so many incredible people.
Sure. I would be open to, I guess, producing a little bit. You know, it's sitting around in the studio is fun when you're making the music and creating the magic. But for me, being a part of that is what I really like in terms of, you know, the playing. So I don't know that sitting in a studio chair telling everybody else what to do on a project that's not mine, if that's really for me full time, I think more something more physical, tour managing and being on the road and grinding. And gotcha. I'm a working guy, man. I can't sit still for very long. So you know, I already enjoy doing the tour managing for the bands I've been in. I assist with my girlfriend's band, Paralandra, when they're out on the road, and I step in and try to play tour manager as much as I can to help them. So I find being in the action is really what I love the most, and being out amongst the people and talking to the fans and the promoters and venue owners, you know, all these different things. That's the thing that really drives me, is building relationships and making those connections, and being with the people that are really making, you know, the scene happen. So yeah, I guess I could explore that, but you know, I always tend to forget that the reason that I'm out doing what I do is it's for the love of the playing.
Yeah.
And being out with Tantric for so many years, I was doing it all, you know, tour managing, playing, driving, you name it, babysitting. And it didn't really hit me until a few years in that it was never really about the music after a while. It was like, you know, you do all these other things just to get to the showtime. And then you get on stage and it's like you're going through the motions. And I kind of fell out of love with the adventure of playing. And I guess when you're playing, you know, radio style songs that are simplified for what I do on bass, I mean, it just kind of ran its course, you know. It's like almost going into autopilot. And so making this transition into the George gig, every night is improv. It's be on your toes because he's going on the set list. It's a 20-minute jam in the middle of a song. It's a real challenge for a musician in the greatest way. And I think I would hate to let that go, and I would hate to go to another band after this that didn't have a little bit of that. You know, it's always, you want to climb up the ladder, but I mean, for what I do, I'm old school. I'm a young guy in an old man's game, and I think the bands that are big for people my age and you know, currently on the radio, I'm not interested in really any of them. I'm not really interested in stuff from the last 20 years. I want to play old school rock and roll, old school hard rock, where people play their instruments and they plug them in, and if it's not plugged in, it doesn't come out. There's no tracks, no bullshit. I want to play the music.
Oh, the question is, there's no way you're going to become an avatar after you guys retire with Lynch.
Oh, please.
Me, and, you know, there's all sorts of levels of stuff. I know people use tracks these days. I know how it goes. I'm not against it. I like organic stuff. And again, a young guy in an old man's game, a lot of my heroes, they're old men. They're not going to be playing much longer. And I think that style of music is going with it. You know, how many more years can Iron Maiden play? How many more years can, you know, some of these icon bands play? And those are the guys that are authentic and organic. I hope that some of these younger bands that do play that style continue to grow. You know, guys like Jared James Nichols, I think he's the last standing guitar hero that there is. And I hope that guys like that, who really play their instruments and pour their heart and soul out on stage, I hope that that still is a big thing moving forward, because I think that's where you'll find me, is with guys that are, you know, believing in that style of music.
So we got a question for you from the audience, from Rock Doc. How is it going from Tantric to Lynch Mob? How has going from Tantric to Lynch Mob changed your rig, changed your setup? Anything different as far as from going one to the other for you?
It's pretty similar. You know, Tantric was more of you're laying a foundation, a big bottom bass to kind of just coat the guitar, you know, just it's more of like a foundation. I would say, as bass should be, but with Lynch, it's more, you know, you're a lot of fills, a lot of this and that. So I tend to cater my tone a little more towards that, a little more cut, a little more less subby and fat, and a little more grit and grind along with that fatness too. But same gear, more cabs if possible. You know, we fly in, so whatever the backline company brings me, I'm happy with. But it's a similar rig, and I've always used a similar rig throughout almost all of my bands over the last 10, 15 years. But, you know, you just kind of tweak it and gator it to the gig.
Bill, any thoughts?
Well, you know, I'll go back to something that Jaron said a few minutes ago regarding, you know, having to be on your toes and follow where George goes over the course of a gig. I would think that one of the challenges in doing that is Yeah, I know a little bit about George's repertoire, and the sense I get is that as a bassist, you almost would be almost closer to what a progressive rock musician might have to do,
sure,
in order to keep up with that, because his style is such where even as a bass player, you're going to be out front a lot of the time. You're going to be carrying a fair amount of the load up front.
Yeah, with a guy like that that likes to solo as much as he does, you know, rather than just playing the root note, sometimes you pick up the riff that maybe the rhythm guitar might have played on the record, or you find ways to fill those holes and to really fill out, you know, underneath him and let him have that freedom to just kind of go off. And, you know, that's not something that the average person, I think, that plays in rock bands, you know, that's not something they're thinking about. They're thinking about, I'm playing the song like it is on the album. Sometimes you got to just put your own flair on there to really spice it up. And I think that's my favorite part about being in this band, because all the lineups I've seen of George's bands over the years, every single one was different and they all brought something different to the table, whether you liked it more or less. You couldn't really compare them because it's just completely different styles. And, you know, I think that me being there, I'm not like Robbie Crane. I'm not like Marco Mendoza. I'm not like Anthony Esposito, all these guys with legacies. I do it my way. And, you know, I've had fans say that's a great thing, because why do you want to copy somebody else? You know, you don't. So for me, that's rewarding. And that's the challenge. Kind of like you said, you know, you just kind of find ways to play a little more and not just one note, like a progressive guy. You got to know your way around the neck.
Yep.
Man, now with you guys, I mean, Lynch Mob has gotten so tight with the new singer, with just the lineup the way it is right now. Could you ever fathom, if George was to hang it up or George was to go somewhere else, could you guys fathom sticking together and maybe doing some more stuff together?
Oh, I would love to work with Jimmy and Gabriel on anything, anytime. Obviously, it wouldn't be Lynch Mob. You know, George right. is the sound of the band. But, I mean, I'll just say this. Playing with a guy like Jimmy DeAnda on stage, I mean, the guy beats his drums to a pulp. I've never played with anybody like it. And it's an honor to stand there and just, you know, lock in. But not only lock in, but watch him. I mean, he's just world class. And then you got a guy like Gabriel. He's new. He's a young guy, relatively, you know, to the scene. And, the guy hits high notes that friggin' shake the walls. I mean, you don't get a lot of that anymore, because the guys that do that are all older. A lot of them don't sing like that anymore. So to be able to be on the stage with three other guys that just hold their own and at their own caliber of skill is just, it's a real honor and a privilege. And again, every single show, every single song, I'm soaking it up.
And you know, he reminds me a lot of what we're seeing in European rock right now.
Sure.
Bands like Heat or Crash Diet or things along those lines. It feels like everywhere else in the world, and you've traveled the world, so you could tell me if I'm off base, but it feels like other parts of the world right now are kind of edging us out as far as rock and roll is concerned.
I think that's been the case for a long time. I mean, the past 20 years, a lot of my favorite stuff that's come out has all been from overseas. You know, they're still diehards to the old school. You got guys still doing bands that sound like Deep Purple over there, old school Whitesnake. I mean, you don't get that here. And if you do, no one knows about them, or they're the opening band on a, you know, an already crappy lineup of a show and nobody cares because they're there for the headliner who's all lights and video screens with show. You know, it's not about the players. It's about the show. And you go overseas and, you know, you don't even have to go overseas anymore. You can go do the Monsters of Rock cruise.
Yeah.
You do some of these festivals where they do bring these bands in, and the appreciation is pretty wild to see, you know, being an American and seeing all the stuff that goes on in the States and touring the States so many years with a current rock band like Tantric, and then looking overseas and like the things that are popular there are completely different.
Yeah.
And, again, it's just, you know, no disrespect to any genres or rock or any era of it. It's just my personal cup of tea, I think, lies a lot with those Euro bands and that sound.
How about you, Bill? What do you think?
The Euro bands are and have been very interesting to me for a long time now for exactly that reason, because they take so many of their cues from the classic bands of the 70s and 80s But they've between those influences and then adding some of the influences from the 80s, the Yngwie style shredding and so forth, they've turned it into something completely different. And I find it really sad that there hasn't been more embracing of these bands by American record companies. The bands that I know about from that genre, and I'll date myself a little bit with this because I haven't followed it now in about 10 years or so, but bands like Iced Earth, Camelot, Blind Guardian were terrific bands that probably deserved a lot more attention in the States than they got. And I listened to some of that music, and the influences are very obvious to me. I hear so much of Deep Purple and Uriah Heep and Whitesnake in that music. It's really rather amazing to me.
Sure.
Man. And it gets to be a catch-22 because the bands are afraid to come to the States because they're not making much money, and it's hard to sustain that tour. Whereas some of the bands, and many of the bands that were famous here at one point, are easily accessible overseas, and they seem a little bit, like you said, Jaron, a little bit more hungry for it, a little bit more. I've talked to Johnny D, and Johnny D was saying that, they just have a deeper appreciation for music over there.
Sure.
What do you think of that, Jaron? Do you see that going over there?
I do. And it's funny because I hate to keep bringing it up, but a band like Tantric, we went over to Europe for the first time in 2019. And the band was virtually unheard of there. I mean, we had a third of the shows were decent, and the rest were just like, being a brand new band playing at a not a coffee shop, but just some random place where nobody really cares. It was, I don't want to say surprising, because a band like that with no presence for 20 years, what can you expect?
Right.
But then you get a band like Heaven's Edge, where no one really knows them, in terms of the mainstream. Here in the States, people that know them are from back in the day. But then we go to Germany this year and we're playing a festival and everyone knows all the words to all the songs.
Oh.
And so it's just kind of goes to show that people gravitate towards what they like maybe and what they find enjoyment in versus what the mass media is pumping out there or what the radio is playing. And again, you go there, and I guess the radio is playing old school stuff there. You do hear stuff like that. When I'm born an East Coast guy listening to the radio my whole life, I only know what Eddie Trunk used to play on the radio before he was big time. And, that was like Jackie Bam. He plays the deep cuts and all this stuff. But you go to the Midwest, and just to piggyback on that, MMR, they're like the only rock station in Philly, really. Besides some of the classic rock, and they're still not really playing a lot of rock. I mean, it's all rock, but you go to the Midwest, there's six or seven rock radio stations in Wisconsin and all these different cities. One's playing all the new stuff, Pop Evil, Shinedown. One's playing 80s stuff. One's playing 90s stuff. It's just a whole different world outside of the coasts and the major cities. And then to expand even more on that is you go to Europe and they're playing the stuff that you would never dream of hearing on the radio. I mean, who plays Headless Cross by Black Sabbath? Most people don't even know that that's an album.
Mighty. Wow.
In Europe, they're playing that on all the changeovers between bands, on all the shows. I mean, it's just a regular thing there. And in a way, I wish I kind of lived there because I would just be, basking in it.
Yeah, I hear you. So what's this coming, what's the upcoming schedule look like for you? Right now, February. What's the plan?
I'm going to Australia with Lynch Mob next week.
Wow.
We're doing three there. It'll be the last Australian shows for George. And then once March kicks, I mean, we're on a tear, man. We're gonna probably hit around 80 plus shows this year for this final ride. And with those, we're also doing this thing called the Rise of the Decades Tour, which is a package that features Lynch Mob, XYZ, and a band called All or Nothing. And essentially, it's like a mini fest, if you will. All or Nothing's a brand new young band, old school but new school, a little mix of everything. And so they open it up. Then they come out with Terry from XYZ. They do a whole XYZ set. And then Lynch Mob comes out, and we do our set. And then at the end, Terry and the AON kids and George come out, and they do a nice little docking set of all the classics. And, you know, it's a lot of fun. It's weird to be, like, doing two tours at once. But, you know, those Rise of the Decades things are just here and there, which is nice. But, yeah, man, we're just dying to play.
Anything close to home for that Rise of the Decades?
It's going to be Lidditz at Mickey's Rock Box.
Nice.
Yeah. So that'll be October 11th, the day before we do Landis again. And I'm sure we'll probably do a couple more. I mean, we're talking about doing 20 or 30 of those this year alone. So hopefully something comes to the Philly area.
Man, looking forward to it. Any last thoughts, Bill? Any questions?
No, I think I'm covered. No, this is a great conversation. I look forward to seeing you come through, definitely.
Oh, appreciate it. Yeah, man, we're excited to play home again. And it's weird because Philly's kind of dropped off the map with venues for rock. And so
we were just discussing that very thing before we went on air.
Yeah.
So, you know, people are always like, why don't you play Philly? I'm like, well, we're playing an hour away at Landis, or we're playing in Lidditz. It's not that far, but people just, I guess, don't travel anymore. But, I mean, where does a band like Lynch Mob play in Philly? It's probably not the smartest move to have that on the marquee regardless.
Right.
But, you know, it's a weird scene. And I'm hoping.
You know, it kills me to see bands like Greta Van Fleet, regardless of what anybody's opinion is on them, but the new carriers of that torch attempted to play the Wells Fargo Center, and I was told it was dead. These are bands that, you know, they do well overseas. Again, bringing up that overseas, they bring them to the States, and there's not much here. And it's, you know, there's like a handful of clubs in Philly, and every time I check into those clubs anymore, there's a million bands that I've never heard of anymore. And it's tough to get out. That's why I'm thankful for places like the Landis that give bands like yours a place to play.
Sure. I think Philly, New York, I think honestly all the major cities, unless the band is from there, you're pretty much dead in the water with rock. You know, you're going to go to the suburbs for that. I mean, metal's always done really great in Philly. Manhattan. I mean, as a kid, I would go see every friggin' metal band from Europe or every thrash band at all these places, and it'd be, you know, packed. But then you would go see Lynch Mob in Manhattan, and yeah, it's a great show because it's Manhattan and it's a legend. But I mean, that show's not doing TLA. That show's not doing, you know, the Fillmore.
Right.
So again, you go like Greta Van Fleet, for example. They bomb here, but you go to the Midwest and all the shows are packed. I mean, we play Wisconsin. It doesn't matter what band. I play Wisconsin a million times with a bunch of different bands. Every show is packed. The Midwest is just a different beast. And I think when you're on the coasts like we are, people just think rock's dead. There's no scene. There is. It's just not where we're from. And it's really disappointing to me that I can't come do a hometown show and it be as good as it is in who cares where Ohio, you know, it's just like,
you're making me want to schedule a road trip, man.
Yeah, like, man, it's
ready to go,
but wild.
I'm going to pick your brain for the best venues once I get out there.
Please do.
But Jared, thank you so much for taking some time out of your busy schedule to hang with us, man. Best of luck for this coming year. I'm sure we'll run into each other soon, but thank you so much, brother.
Appreciate you guys having me.
Have a good evening.
See you guys. Take care, John.
Thanks, Bill.
All right, there was Jaron Gelino, man. Really, really great guest, good friend of mine. We've known each other for years at this point. And it's sad, Bill. I just wanted to ask you that question real quick as far as rock kind of fading out. It's good to hear that there's hotbeds out in the Midwest and that there's areas like that, and that perhaps being coast guys, that's what we see is. And he's right. You know, I rode to work this morning listening to MMR, and without giving out artist names or whatever, they're playing on MMR, the same artists that they play on country radio. And I'm like, this shows me where rock is going.
Yeah, there really aren't that many places that I can think of on radio to really hear good rock and roll. There are two stations in my neck of the woods in central and North Jersey where you can hear true rock and roll, at least as I define it. One is on the Jersey Shore on WRAT. The Rat is.
Rat's great. Yeah.
Yep. And then a little bit further north, of course, is WDHA. I mean, talking about the venues and how radio drives some of you know, the turnout for shows. My band back right around New Year's played a show at a relatively new venue in central slash North Jersey, a place called the Dunellen Theater in the town of Dunellen.
Well, yeah.
And one of the things that was really interesting about that show, which we had a fantastic turnout, bigger turnout than any of us expected. One of the things that was a little different about that show was the management at the Dunellen put regular advertising on DHA. Our band's name and the scheduling of the show was being mentioned six times a day for the better part of a month. And it matters.
Yeah, it does.
Radio really still matters, at least when you're past a certain age.
And, you know, I also, you know, that's a topic that I want to bring up on a later podcast, is how important that is, that marketing and the proper marketing and things that bands kind of fall out of step with as far as maybe oversaturation or flooding the market with too many of the same types of bands. I mean, doing the podcast with the Landis, there's a million tribute bands out there, but then there's tribute bands. We were just talking about this last night. There's tribute bands that are only put together to get a couple of dollars. So like, what can we market? What can we sell? And then you're selling the same band that's already out there, but maybe hungrier than you or love the music more than you do. And it shows.
Well, and the other thing about it, and it comes into the marketing that you just mentioned, there are some bands out there that I think take the lazy way out in that they are looking to, you know, catch the wave that has been caught before by other bands. Yeah. So you end up as a result of that with, you know, in any given area, four Led Zeppelin tributes, four Tom Petty tributes. I mean,
the Ozzy, like.
Mm-hmm. And don't get me wrong, I love all that music. I mean, I've never been a huge Tom Petty fan, but I have an appreciation for his music, and a good Petty tribute, I'm sure, would be something that I'd really enjoy watching. Yeah. But it's too easy for people to take that route and assume that they're going to get a turnout. And some of them will for a while until people realize that they just aren't very good.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. And seeing some of the tributes that I've seen amazing tributes, and then I've seen bands that just cover a band's material, if that makes sense. And no real feeling behind it. Just this is a cover of a song that's been played 25 times. Like, it gets frustrating. It really does. And you can tell the difference between people that love their music and people that just go through the motions.
Well, and it hurts the bands out there who are really working hard to perfect their craft.
I agree.
Getting back to the Led Zeppelin tributes, I mean, one band that we both are familiar with, I'm sure, is, you know, the Flying Circus.
Yeah.
Who are very, very good. But I'm sure that to a certain degree, their band is hurt from both ends, because you have mega tributes like Get the Lead Out, who play the area, and then you have lousy tributes who, they get out, they play some Led Zeppelin, and they don't do it very well. A band like Flying Circus gets squeezed in the middle of that.
Yeah.
They can't compete on one side, and they're so much better than the other side, but they're probably going to get lumped in with the other side when people have seen some of those bad bands.
I agree with you 100%. But, Bill, I'm going to wrap this up right now, but pleasure as always. Oh, we have to give each other the Have You Heard songs for next week.
Yes, we do.
So what I'm thinking, just because I compared it earlier and wanted to say that I kind of felt it, Little Pretties for You, 7 Inches from the Worm is the name of the song on there. And a good tune worth checking out.
I have been meaning to expose myself to Alice's first two albums for a very long time, and just for whatever reason have never done it. So time has come, it sounds like.
There it is.
I'm going to give you one that is going to be interesting because you're not going to expect it when I tell you what band it's from.
Okay.
The band is King Crimson.
Okay.
The song that I want you to listen to is called Frame by Frame.
Frame by Frame. Okay.
And just to give you a little bit of background as to why I think you'll find it very different. King Crimson is a band that's gone through multiple lineup changes over the course of its tenure. They made their first album in 1969, which I know you and I have had long discussions about in the past.
Yeah.
That lineup of that band lasted basically for two albums and disintegrated. They went through multiple lineup changes throughout the 70s and actually then went on hiatus for about 5 years. In 1981, they reemerged with yet a new lineup that was largely based on some of the work that was going on in the new wave sphere back in that time frame, but making it both melodic on one side and very technical from a musical perspective on the other side. Gotcha. When you listen to Frame by Frame, you'll hear what I mean. Frame by Frame has nothing like the King Crimson that I know you're familiar with.
So, yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I mean, I'm currently, just to let you know, and I'll send it over to you, I'm building our Have You Heard playlist on Spotify, so anybody that wants to check out any of these songs can do so. And I'll make sure, Bill, that I send it to you over the week. I've been adding the songs each and every week that we discuss them. So I'm enjoying this, and I'm looking forward to continuing this.
Now, Lord knows there's a ton of music to share.
Absolutely. Oh, absolutely. And that's the beauty of God, rock and roll is just, we could share for years and still not scratch the surface. So, Bill, my friend, have a great rest of your week, and we'll be talking soon.
All right. Sounds great, CT.
Guys, until next time, don't just leave it better. Everybody have a great week. Talk to you soon.
Hey, this is Total Package, Lex Luger. You're listening to the VOC Nation. Don't miss out.
VOC Nation's own Stro Maestro suffered a major medical and financial catastrophe this year. From the VOC Nation family, to all of you, please continue to pray for Stro Maestro for his continued recovery. You can also donate to his cause, paypal.me/PapaStro.
The worldwide leader in entertainment. This is the VOC Nation Radio Network.
Check out In the Room
every Tuesday night at 9. Listen in.
Pro Wrestling Illustrated's Brady Hicks, former WCW star Stro Maestro, Kazzy Fist, Matt Grimm.
And you and Ray are there too, right, Ray?
We sure are, and we've got great guests like Lex Luger, AJ Styles, Taku, and more. It's a heck of a party. Plus,
I didn't get thrown off buildings.
And then
I didn't get pregnant either.
Sometimes I think it gets so ridiculous.
We were getting into like snuff film territory there.
In the Room.
9 p.m. Eastern on VOC Nation.
Yo, this is Jerry Steins of the Nasty Boys. Yeah, Brian Knobs here. You get ready to get nasty? Well, listen to the VOC Nation, baby.
VOC Nation is one of the longest running wrestling podcast networks. Having started way back in 2010, VOC Nation provides daily streaming shows where fans have the ability to interact with their hosts and guests via phone calls, emails, and Twitter. VOC Nation hosts include former backstage interviewer from both AWA and WWE, Ken Resnick, former WCW performer The Maestro, former Impact performer Wes Crisco, Pro Wrestling Illustrated contributor Brady Hicks, and former Philadelphia radio personality Bruce Works. Archive-free content includes past interviews with huge names like Hulk Hogan, Jesse Ventura, Kurt Angle, Jimmy Hart, Ricky Steamboat, Sting, Mick Foley, Joey Styles, Howard Finkel, and so many more. Listen live at VOCNation.com and subscribe to all the podcasts by searching VOC Nation Radio Network on your favorite podcast app. And be sure to follow these guys on Twitter at VOC Nation.
Phil Apter has been in the pro wrestling business for over 50 years.
Hey, Tony here with Arn Anderson. Arn, first of all, your height and weight.
6'1", 255.
And now subscribers to VOC Nation Premium get exclusive access to Bill Apter's archived audio footage.
And where's your hometown?
Minneapolis, Minnesota.
Okay, and give us something about your back. First of all, your relationship to Ole Anderson.
Ole is my...
Subscription to VOC Nation Premium starts at just $3 a month and includes commercial-free audio and video versions of our top podcasts.
Okay, we're speaking here with the manager of the World Heavyweight Tag Team Champions, Tarzan Tyler and Luke Graham, and he's sort of glowing tonight about a new prospect we haven't heard of yet.
And for just $9 a month, Apter's archives are all yours.
Would you tell us who this new prospect
is?
Well,
I'll tell you, Bill, I've searched the world, and I finally found a true world champion. I finally found...
Angelo, what's your opinion of Ivan Koloff winning the title from Bruno Sammartino?
Well, I think... I don't know what to say, but I want to say one thing. Bruno was a hell of a champion.
Hear exclusive interviews with the greatest performers of all time.
This is Bill Apter, and once again, we're speaking here with Bruno Sammartino. Bruno, first of all, how did you and Bruiser lose that title to the Valiants?
Well, actually, it was a very unusual loss, if you want to call it a loss.
Did he didn't have anything to do?
Well, yes, but the whole thing is this, that the rules, as I always understood them, was that the title could only be lost by pin or submission, which is the same rules as my title, the World Wrestling Federation. That night, it was...
To sign up, it's very simple. Head to premium.vocnation.com or go to patreon.com/vocnation. VOC Nation takes you behind the scenes of the greatest moments in pro wrestling history.
Each and every Thursday night, check it out, WCW star Stro Maestro takes you on a journey. It's WCW Retro, talking old school match of the week, talking dream matches, taking your calls and looking back on an incredible career of acting, entertaining, and wrestling. Check it out, VOCNation.com, WCW Retro. Be sure to call in Thursday nights, 9 Eastern, on the VOC Nation Radio Network.
This is Matt Hardy, and you are listening to the VOC Nation.